From Podcast Detroit Studios, in the heart of the Motor City, it's time for your source for Blue Collar Talk, the ARC Junkies podcast. Here's your host, Jimmy McKnight.
What's up, everybody, and welcome to episode 34 of ARC Junkies. I am your host, Jimmy McKnight, and it is so cold in the D. I mean, it is absolutely freezing here right now. We had an ice storm last night. It has taken out power in most of the lower part of the state. So many people are without power right now. The actual studio itself is without power, and I am recording this at the home studio because Podcast Detroit Studios can't exactly do its job without power. So I am back here at home. I am blessed enough to have power because the show must go on. But before I get started, I want to talk to you about our sponsors, ESOB. This episode is sponsored by the ESOB Sentinel A50. You've heard me blab on about the ESOB Sentinel A50. I did a whole episode about the ESOB Sentinel a couple episodes back. Please feel free to go check it out. It's with myself, Bob Moffitt, Scott Robbie, and Bulldog Welding. We all just go over this thing, the ups and downs, but it is an absolute phenomenal hood. I mean, just listen to what this thing offers. This thing offers four sensors, a 60 by 100 millimeter large viewing area, a true color view display. This view display is unlike anything else I've ever used personally, and I absolutely love it. It is a quick release front cover lens, a 5-point halo head harness, an external grind button, which I never really was a fan of adjustments on the outside of the hood, but this grind button, the way that it actually sits on the hood is phenomenal. It's very sleek. Just press on it for a couple seconds and it changes to grind mode and you can just keep going on. I absolutely love it. And there's also an 8x memory set color touch screen interface. There's all kinds of settings that you can do with this hood. It is an absolute phenomenal product. So go to www.esobna.com right now and make sure to order yours today, because this hood is absolutely phenomenal, and I promise once you get one, you will not be disappointed. All right, and moving on, the big announcements. I will be attending OTC's grand opening of their brand new training facility May 16th. Right here in Michigan. It's going to be absolutely awesome. We're going to be doing a live podcast from 4 to 5, and I'm going to have special guests Speed Cult, Kevin O'Brien himself from OTC, and a couple other guests. It's going to be absolutely awesome. We're going to be talking the maker movement, robotic welding. We're going to be doing some Facebook Live stuff. There's going to be a welding contest, a robotic ribbon cutting for the ceremony. How cool is that? Like I said, I'm going to be doing my podcast live in front of a live audience there. There's going to be free local food and drinks. The beer is going to be provided by none other than the Falling Down Beer Company, which brings me to my next topic. This episode is also sponsored by the Falling Down Beer Company. And special thanks to the Podcast Detroit Network. Go into any Falling Down Beer location, mention Podcast Detroit Network, and get $1 off of your first pint or beer. I believe that they are going to be providing Ninja Chicken, which is an absolute phenomenally delicious golden joy of a beer at this open house. It's going to be a lot of fun, like I said. Also, the welding class from Schoolcraft College is going to be there. They're going to be stopping by and saying hi and checking out all of the things that OTC actually offers at this training facility. More info to come. Like I said, this is going to be May 16th. That's a Wednesday from 11 in the morning to 7 at night. And the podcast goes live in front of the audience from 4 to 5 p.m. You don't want to miss this. It's going to be a lot of fun. So if you are in the area, DM me for more details. Like I said, I'm going to be posting more things about it as more details come in, but this is going to be so much fun, and I'm really, really looking forward to this. And, putting OTC, their OTC is really starting to put themselves on the map. So, you know, good for them. That's an awesome, they're a great company. Let's see, what else do we got? I was a guest. I was fortunate enough to be a guest on the Tool Pros podcast. These guys reached out to me and they were like, hey, you know, we want to have an episode about welding, talk about different processes. And, I was more than honored to go on the podcast. It was a lot of fun. Check it out, the Tool Pros podcast. I believe this episode will be airing Wednesday, and I will make sure to be posting about it on Instagram and Facebook and Twitter, along with links to go with it. But the episode was a lot of fun. Those are great guys over at the Tool Pros podcast. And I look forward to doing more stuff with them guys in the future. So Wednesday, keep a lookout for that. It was definitely a lot of fun. All right, that's it for announcements. Moving on, this episode's guest. I was fortunate enough to talk to James Flatman, a.k.a. Narcissistic Wrench, on Instagram. James works for Cruising Kitchens, and you guys can check out Cruising Kitchens at cruisingkitchens.com just to see a visual of what it is these guys do. You can also find them at Cruising Kitchens on Instagram. These guys make absolutely just beautiful custom kitchens. Like, think of a Roach Coach on steroids. But I mean, even throwing Roach Coach in the sentence to describe them does them a disservice. These are 100% badass custom fabricated mobile kitchens or mobile offices. I mean, these structures are absolutely phenomenal that they make. Go check it out so you can see exactly what it is that we're talking about while you're listening to this episode. But James is also from Australia, which is really cool. So we dive into his work from the day to day at Cruising Kitchens. Also, we get into his trip from Australia to America and why it is that he decided to do that, and also his journey to the Ark as he is a welder for his day-to-day job. We also get into the type of equipment that they have there at Cruising Kitchens, and this episode was just a lot of fun. So, ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, James Flatman of Cruising Kitchens, and we are live. James, thanks for coming on the show. It's awesome to have you here.
Thanks for having me, mate. Thanks for having me.
Anytime, man. I'm a little bit familiar with where you work, which is Cruising Kitchens. The only reason is because I saw them on the Discovery Channel on a show called Blue Collar Backers, and it kind of exposed me to the company. And then when I looked a little further into the company, I saw what you guys actually do, which is, I mean, just amazing. You make absolutely mind-blowing cruising kitchens, mobile offices. The stuff is absolutely fantastic. So I would like for you to tell me what Cruising Kitchens actually does.
So the company, I mean, it started off, they were just building mom-and-pop food trucks. They were never down at that Roach Coach level, but they've always built like food trucks, legitimate food trucks. Mm-hmm. The owner has... I mean, he's just got this imagination that's out there. So he comes up with these ideas when he's talking to clients, and then he comes to myself and a couple of the other guys, and we got to figure out how to make it happen. We don't have any engineers, you know. We just, every build is different, so you know, we go with a real basic sketch and just basically start building. Dude, I love it. It's something different every project. For me personally, I view it as being a kid playing with Lego every day. Which, you know, I'm not going to lie, some of the bigger projects, like the shipping container projects, I'll mock them up with Lego at home with my 12-year-old son before actually making, you know, cutting steel or aluminum and getting started on it. We've sent them all around the world too. Trucks, shipping containers, I mean, anywhere and everywhere. Everyone is different. We get full creative freedom. We're not stuck to a set of blueprints. You know, we get our initial concept, customer signs off on it, and we go at it. And we have a lot of fun doing it. And I mean, we've got a shop full of ridiculously talented people, whether it's wood, whether it's sheet metal, welding, everybody feeds off each other. And you know, you got 30 guys working in a shop that everyone gets along. And I'm sure, you know, that's pretty rare in shops these days.
Oh, that's extremely rare. The fact that you found something where everybody gets along, I mean, with a camaraderie level at the max, has to be fantastic, especially if it's productive at the same time.
And that's the thing. It is. I mean, you know, humans are humans. Every so often, someone will get pissed at someone, but an hour or so later, you know, it's done and gone, and we're back at it.
Yeah.
And everyone really does feed off each other. Which, you know, I think that's the only reason we build half of what we build, because everyone is working so closely together. And, you know, someone will look at what you're doing and be like, hey, have you ever tried it this way? And it's like, no, but let's give it a shot. And it usually works out 10 times better.
you know, looking at the product that you guys actually make, I mean, you're right. It is 100% custom build every single time. You know, and I really encourage people to go to cruisingkitchens.com just to see what we're talking about, the actual level of product that you're making. What has been the biggest challenge so far since you've worked there? Is there a certain project that really sticks out to where it was like it really tested your mettle on actually fabricating that thing?
Yeah, without a doubt. It was the first shipping container job. It's a 40-foot shipping container getting mounted to a low boy trailer. 15-foot stage that, you know, basically had to cut a big old hole in the side of the container, and they wanted it hydraulically controlled up and down, and then they also wanted an awning that folded down over top of that when everything was shut, and then a big old jumbotron on the roof of the shipping container. Which, you know, it was my first time messing with hydraulics. So I went down to the local Holt Caterpillar dealership and I walked around looking at bulldozers, excavators, seeing how cylinders were mounted and what systems they were using, and made a little mock-up version of it out of scrap metal, and it worked. So we're like, well, let's see what happens. And yeah, we got it all fit in, got everything working, but then we had the challenge of, well, we got two complete kitchens in here, and you know, there's guidelines for different cities as far as health codes that you got to stick to, like different spacing in between equipment. So biggest issue then was, well, we need to hide all these cylinders and run the hoses underneath the trailer, but it's a low boy trailer, so they are damn low to the ground. That one definitely tested me more than any other one. Other learning curve I had, my background was in, before starting at Cruising Kitchens, I was building custom bicycles and doing aerospace welding. First food truck I jumped in to do some framework, it messed with me big time, because nothing in those trucks are square from the factory. You know, you can have what's meant to be a 90 on a corner and it's half inch out, an inch out. So I would fixture everything up on my table and then go take it to the truck and it wouldn't fit because what I built on the table was somewhat square and the truck was far from it.
Oh, yeah.
So then I had to change my approach, start building stuff in the truck versus on the table. But it didn't seem, for me at the time, it didn't seem like the right way to do it. It's just, you know, shifting my approach to make it work, which, yeah, they would have been the two biggest hurdles.
Yeah, I know what you mean, man, because I did a little bit of work on some military trucks overseas, and it was that exact same thing. You know, it was built from the truck out. You know, you had pieces that were, you know, cut to the actual dimensions of what they should have been. But when it came to actually installing those pieces, a lot of times you had to fabricate on the spot and cut to fit, you know, to make it actually work, because things change, you know, the measurements change, things move as, you know, these things roll down the road, you know, after so many years, things change.
Well and truly. And those first couple of times I'd stand there scratching my head, like, dang, which tape measure did I use? You know, checking all my tools, like, no, everything's good. Like, what is going on?
So I have to bring up the fact that I can't help but hear your accent. Where are you from originally?
So Australia, grew up just outside of Melbourne, and which is way southeast, and then also grew up in the Northern Territory, which is full blown outback on a 3,000 acre cattle station.
Oh, wow.
So a little different to, well, you know what? Texas is pretty similar to Australia, honestly. People's attitudes and landscape. So it's not too different. A lot different to LA, where I first moved to.
Right.
I lasted about 2 months in Southern LA. It was just too much of a culture shock for me.
Yeah. I've been to LA once, and you're right. It is like, where am I? This is like planet fantasy land.
right.
So I have to ask, I mean, if you don't mind, what was the pull to, make the jump across the pond? I mean, what was the draw to go from Australia to America?
Well, I was So all through, you know, through school and college, I was working in bicycle shops as a mechanic. Raced a lot of bikes, BMX, mountain bike, and then got to a point I wanted to build my own frame, like custom frame. So there was a job going in LA, so I came over, you know, basically packed up, brought my dog with me, and came over. Couldn't handle LA, so there was a similar job in Colorado at a frame building company. They were looking for a mechanic for their pro mountain bike team. So I saw that as my foot in the door. So I wrenched on bikes for a year or so, and then I think they just got sick of me hanging around outside of my normal work hours, sweeping the floor and wanting to weld. And one day they're like, all right, we'll teach you to weld. Now, the kicker is that company, it was all titanium frames. So I actually learned to TIG weld on titanium, which is, you know, at the time, I had no idea how lucky I was.
Oh, yeah,
you
know, that's extreme. Like, that's quite the exotic metal.
This is awesome. I'm blowing holes through tubing. I'll just grab another piece. You know, now looking back, it's like, damn, I wasted a lot of money in materials that, you know, I was trying to weld because a lot of it, like inch and a half, inch and three quarter tubing, that's 0.35, 0.45 thick. So, you know, I burn a lot of holes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, especially starting out.
Yeah, yeah. And so they, you know, one of the guys sort of took me under his wing and taught me how to run the mills and the lathes and how to, you know, coat tubing and clean it up, get it ready for welding, and then taught me how to weld. And it just sort of, it went from there.
How old were you when all this was going down?
Yeah, I was 28.
Okay.
28. So I started late.
Yeah.
I'll be 42 next month, so I really did start late. I mean, I did what I thought was welding on our farm, but it was just, you know, very, very agricultural repairs.
Right.
Yeah, nothing. I've no way I could have called what I did back then welding. It was really just hoping it would stick together and stay.
It really is amazing when you go from, you know, say, and taking nothing away from, you know, that level of welding. But, you know, you kind of grow up in that farm atmosphere where you're just doing repairs, you know, with some stick welding, or you might be in a, you know, say you're in a automotive rack shop where you're just, you know, MIG welding all day. And it seems like, you know, that's welding. Like, welding is just welding. And then you get the opportunity, you know, like you had, where you're going from, you know, that to titanium welding, or, you know, you get thrown from the automotive into the aerospace, and it's like, now there's all these standards and regulations, and you find out that welding just isn't welding. There's a lot more to it, and the book just constantly just keeps getting more and more pages added to this.
Exactly. And it's mind-blowing. I mean, welding can be as much as you want it to be or as little as you want to be.
Yeah.
I like learning. I mean, shoot, I've been, what, close to 12 years, and I'm still learning something new every day.
Mm-hmm.
And Instagram's a huge thing for that, you know. When I jumped on Instagram, I thought I was a good welder, but then I started seeing people like Moserfab and Blackburn, Rolling Bomb. I was like, well, damn, I need to step my game up.
Yeah.
And you know, Blackburn and Rolling Bomb, the amount of knowledge they've shared with me is huge. You know, the guys that are out there that are willing to share their knowledge to help others grow is phenomenal.
We're very lucky to have such a wonderful community of people in the welding online community, especially on Instagram, especially, you know, Facebook could be a little bit questionable.
That's a whole nother world,
but Instagram definitely. And you're right. You know, a lot of these guys, you know, and then, you know, this has been said before on other shows too, you know, just ask. And, you know, these guys are more than willing to answer your questions and help you out, you know, and help you get to that level where you might be missing something that they could explain easily. You know, and we're very fortunate. And the fact that they're so willing to help and help you promote, you know, something that you're doing, you know, I mean, this podcast is the perfect example of that. I mean, you know, this podcast gets talked about and shared by so many people in the welding community, and I'm absolutely blessed that it happens. And it's all because they really honestly just like what we're doing, for one, and it's relative, and it's providing entertainment. And the fact that we're giving them something that they like, you know, they're sharing it and spreading the word, and honestly, man, it's awesome. And it's something that I feel that it wouldn't have happened at the level it's happening in any other community other than this one.
You know, other trades aren't as open with their information. I got friends that are sparkies and friends that are plumbers, and you know, they won't share knowledge. They act like what they're doing is top secret formula that they've figured out, which 9 times out of 10 it isn't, you know?
Yep.
So
yeah, that's that old school mentality of, if I teach you my secrets, then you're going to take work away from me, you know? Yeah. And that maybe that was the case way, way back in the day, you know, and I'm talking like way back in the day where, you know, your skills and secrets is what kept you employed. That's not really the case now, especially with things like YouTube and other resources at our fingertips. You know, if I'm asking you a question that you don't want to tell me, I guarantee you I'm going to be able to find out the answer to that question within a few minutes of my own searching online.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt.
You know, so why be a dick and not share the information? I mean, if someone's curious and honestly looking, offer a helping hand.
Oh, yeah. And if you do, I mean, a lot of the time, like, I've had guys come into different shops for weld tests. And just, you know, I've picked up little things from guys that are coming in for a weld, you know, basic weld test. I'm like, well, damn, he held, his torch angle was a little different, or he feeds his filler this way. And then, you know, when they're gone, I'm like, well, you know what, I'm going to give that a try. And for some applications, it worked better than what I was doing before. So, I mean, the more everyone knows, the better everyone else is off, the better off everyone is. I mean, it's a win-win as far as I see.
Right. I've learned quite a few things, too, from watching people on Instagram. The one thing that's, you know, I keep trying, but I can't seem to get it, is feeding my filler like Kane Kid with the cane grip, man. I have tried over and over and over, and I'm like, I don't know how this dude does it, but he makes it look so effortless, and mate, it turns out so good.
I gave it a shot, and all I did was feed my filler into the tungsten. I was like, nope, didn't work for me.
I keep trying, man. I keep failing, but I'm going to keep trying just because it looks so cool. And I'm like, well, maybe there's something to it. You know, I wonder if doing that way, you know, could save your hand in the long run. Who knows? But whatever he's doing, he's doing awesome with it. I'm going to keep trying until I get it.
too good.
I'm looking on your Instagram here, and I'm seeing that you guys are absolutely loaded with ESOB equipment. Let's talk a little bit about the equipment that you guys have there at Cruisin' Kitchens. These are the 235i's, right?
Yeah, we got the Rebel 235i's, and then we just got the ET220.
Okay.
You know, for what we do, we had an assortment of other machines, and so like one person would have a MIG and a TIG, and we're in the little shop, so space is limited. I went to FabTech in Chicago and tried out the Rebel, the 205, the ACDC, and I was just like, dang, this thing is unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
And then tried out the 235, and you know, I'm not going to lie, I probably spent way too much time in the ESOB booth, just loitering and, you know, watching and playing. But it just made sense. Everybody, you know, we got the 235, so everyone's got a stick machine, a MIG machine, and, you know, the 235, it's only DC TIG. But for most of the guys, they do more stainless than they do aluminum, mm-hmm. So that works fine. I got a bottle of straight helium sitting at the shop, so I want to try aluminum on the DC with the Rebel. But, you know, for what we're doing, a multi-process machine just makes sense. The other thing was, at FabTech, that I noticed, ESOB people were a lot more approachable than the other big names. To the point that I made a joke about them being the blue collar heroes in the industry, because I got a Sentinel hood a long time ago, loved it. Had a question about it, man, they responded within like 5 minutes. Whereas other companies, when I've had issues or questions, you know, a couple of days, a week goes by and you don't hear anything. We don't, you know, we pay for our equipment, and knowing that they're going to stand by their product, and if you have questions, you'll get a response. You know, for a small shop like that, like us, that goes a long way. It's, you know, it's how we operate with our customers. So companies that are willing to do that for us, if they've got what we need, they're going to get our business. It's a no-brainer.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more, man. Honestly, you know, I bled blue probably for the first 14 years of my 15-year career. And that moment that you just described at FabTech at the ESOP booth last year in Chicago, that's what did it for me, too. That's what changed me. And I've brought this up on the podcast quite a few times, but my experience in that booth changed my direction on what brand I really want to be using, just because of, A, you're right, the customer service. But not only that, it was the attitude of the company. It was the type of product that the company offered and the quality of it. You know, once I kind of stepped out of the box and opened up my eyes to what they actually offer as a company, I became 100% sold on them. I've entrenched myself in the company since then. I've got the ESOP Sentinel. I've got the Rebel. I've got a Thermal Dynamics plasma cutter. And yeah. I mean, all this stuff is stuff that I absolutely love. And I don't think that any other company could have made it any better, because it's like, not only do I have these products, but I have the excellent customer service that comes with it with ESOP when you go that way.
That, you're exactly right. I mean, customer service, it's a dying issue with most, you know, with bigger companies. Unless you've got, you know, for me, my Instagram following is not huge. Which some of the other companies, that was the first thing they would look at when I was talking to them.
Yeah.
They want to know how big a profile you are. And for someone like me, that's not huge, it didn't get me very far with some of the other companies.
Yeah.
ESOP didn't care about that. You know, they took the time to answer all the questions I had. And then some, you know, so I'm sold. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I know what you're saying. It was it's so funny that you brought that aspect of it up, because when I won't mention the company, but when I got to Chicago, I was invited for a kind of like a pre-show demonstration, and the first thing when I met the contact from that company was like, who are you? And, you know, oh, are you this person with this many followers? You know, that's what they wanted to know right off rip,
right?
Is, you know, oh, how many followers do you have? And, oh, this person has this many followers, you know, and it almost seemed like they just wanted to bring you in. And I get it. It was, you know, bring you in, use your following for their exposure, you know? Yeah. And it, you know, at the time, like, yes, it was cool that we got to go in and see that stuff. But at the same time, it was like, I kind of feel like, y'all used me up. And especially it felt that way afterwards when, you know, you tried to reach out to that company and be like, hey, you know, I'd love to talk to you guys about what it actually was, you know, that you showed there, and then you never hear from them. So, you know,
the least they can do is call you the next morning.
Oh, right. But, you know, you never heard from them. So, I mean, hey, it is what it is. And that's something that's, you know, it's definitely changing. And I think you're going to see that at FabTech this year, too. You know, the community or the industry has awoken to the actual online community, and they now realize that this is marketable for them, that these people have thousands and thousands of followers that are in the welding industry that people pay attention to, and they're trying to tap into that. So we really got to be careful as content providers and people in this community who we more or less, you know, decide to promote, because I mean, their intentions could be in the right, or they could just be using you, and you really got to kind of figure it out before you say I do, for lack of a better expression.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. Exactly right.
Right on, man. Well, James, thank you so much for taking the time. I know you said before we started recording, you're actually at a Renaissance festival right now.
Yeah.
That's cool. What are you, hiding out in the truck or something to do this?
I am right now. Yes. I'm in no hurry to get back in. If you want to keep talking, that's not a problem with it.
Oh, that's awesome. I wish I could, man. I wish I could. I'm running out of time myself. But yeah, man, go enjoy the Renaissance festival. Make sure you get some mutton. And before I let you go, please tell everybody what your name on Instagram so they can find you and follow your work with Cruising Kitchens.
So Narcissistic Wrench is my personal page on Instagram, and Cruising Kitchens is a company I work for. A lot of good stuff on both pages, I think. So hey, thank you for having me. Really appreciate it.
Hey, anytime, man. You are welcome back anytime. And like I said, go enjoy yourself in the festival, and we'll be in touch, man. Thanks a lot for coming on the show.
You have a good day.
You too. All right, everybody, thank you so very much. That's it for this episode. Remember, if you'd like to email the show, you can, arcjunkies@gmail.com. Let me know if you like what I'm doing or don't like what I'm doing. Also, if you are an Apple iTunes listener, please remember to hit subscribe and leave a review, because your reviews ultimately help the show reach more people and gain higher up on the rankings. And thank you to all of those who have done the reviews so far. I absolutely love hearing from you guys. I'd like to get into a couple of the reviews here before we go, just to show my appreciation for what you guys do, because the reviews really do. They absolutely touch my heart, and it's a lot of fun to read what you guys think of the show. We'll start off with a review here from Just a Welder, who says, "This show made me enjoy welding again. Thanks for doing this podcast. You do a great job. I enjoy your guests, your honesty, and your enthusiasm. It's cool you're local also. The podcast has helped re-spark my interest in welding. Keep it up." Thank you so much for that, man. That's awesome. I'm glad the show has really helped you get your spark back. And, you know, keep on welding, man. That's what it's all about, man. Just keep on burning and earning. And then this next one is typed, "I like it, but it's way too short. The last episode was only like 19 minutes or something. I'm digging the show, but please make them longer. I feel like on most episodes, y'all have a great conversation going, and then all of a sudden, well, that's gonna do it. LOL, no! Anyways, I really like the show. Like I said, I just wish it were longer." Well, let me explain that. See, at the network that I'm at, there is like 80-plus shows in rotation, and I get exactly an hour slot. That is an hour slot to set up, tear down, and get ready for the next show to either get out of the studio or come into the studio. And that also gives me time to do intros and ads and other things. And if I get, I try to tell the guests to come or call at a certain time. And if they're late, that, you know, pulls in on the hour. So it just is what it is. But I try to get at least a 30-minute episode to you guys every single week. That is the goal. Sometimes it's a little less, sometimes it's a little more, but you're going to get basically 30-minute episodes for me from now on. That's the goal. That's what Arc Junkies is going to be. And like I said, sometimes a little bit more, sometimes a little less, but it is what it is, because the show must go on one way or the other. The last review I'm going to get to is titled, "Go Jimmy. Great podcast. Lots of good interviews. Awesome inside info on the big names in the industry." This is from ForestFab350. Thank you guys very much for your reviews. I really do appreciate it. Like I said, keep them coming, because the reviews are really the number one podcast currency in this medium that we choose to listen to and partake in. And thank you guys so very much for listening. Again, check out the website, www.arcjunkies.com. And until next week, stay safe and weld hard.